As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello and welcome to the latest Laz and Powers podcast. I'm Mark Lazarus. This is Scott Powers. We're from The Athletic. And we apologize that we haven't done one of these in a while. We kind of, our schedules have been a little wonky lately.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's been a whole lot to talk about. Once we got, I don't even know, the last one we did was the Pride Night.
Is that the last time we did one?
Yeah.
Man, we're bad at this. Yeah. I can't believe we're not at the top of the charts. How is 32 Thoughts bigger than us? Come on.
Yeah, no, there isn't a whole lot to happen. I mean, honestly, a lot's happened the last few days with Taves and then the lottery, I'm just making excuses, whatever. We're sorry.
We're lazy, we're bad at our jobs, and we hate our listeners. I think that's all it is.
Yeah.
Now, it has been a busy couple of days, momentous, you could even say. We just left Blackhawks exit interviews. It was locker cleanout day here at Fifth Third Arena. We are in the Podmobile in the parking lot, a lot of the talk is about Jonathan Taves, who is now an ex-Blackhawk.
Yeah.
Kyle Davidson told him flat out, we're not re-signing you, never offered him a contract, just like they never offered Patrick Kane a contract. Davidson used the term clear the decks for the next, you know, leadership group to come in. But essentially, you know, Kane and Taves were shown the door, which is pretty momentous.
And I feel like, at least when I just got back from New York and I had talked to Kane, and it made it sound like he never expected the contract and like it wasn't something that he wanted. Like, he understood it, and I think he was more driven to play meaningful hockey and all this was more important to him. And he said that, you know, I'm like, you know, you weighed there's so much weight on your mind going, like, are you happy? And he's like, you know, I would have regretted if I didn't ask for the trade. You know, and I think Taves would have happily come back. You know, I think this was what he wanted, to be back here and his role. And on the one hand, that's hard because you have this legend you're saying goodbye to, and you're kicking out the door. On the other, this is something that Stan Bowman and the last regime didn't do, is that they held on to everyone for too long and overpaid people. And if Kyle Davidson and company think that Jonathan Taves doesn't help the team and that's what they believe, then they stuck to it. So there's, like, on the one hand, like, yeah, this is, I think it's challenging because you're, you know, like, Taves isn't leaving on his own terms. But the other is that Kyle Davidson obviously believes that this is the best route going forward, and the fact that he's coming after a regime that failed to do this, I think it gives him some leeway with that, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give Kyle credit for sticking to his vision, right? Like, he's a first-year GM. He's the same age, basically, as Jonathan Taves. It takes some guts to do this. It really does take some guts to do what he's been doing. Taves is really interesting because, like, you know, I talked to him over the summer, and he basically said, look, a long-term rebuild does not interest me. But I think very quickly as the year went on, he realized that being the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks mattered to him more at this stage of his career than chasing a cup in some other jersey, being a Colorado Avalanche or whatever. Are you an Avalanche? Are you an individual as an Avalanche? Or are you an, I don't know how that works with these stupid singular name teams. Like, why couldn't it just be the Krakens? There's not just one Kraken. I digress. But Taves, he really seemed over the course of the year to start appreciating. You know, he's been very kind of like philosophical and wide perspective since he came back from his year.
I think reality struck a little bit.
And
yeah.
Also that, like, he knows he's not the player. Like, he said that to me when I talked to him in Vancouver last week. He's like, the hardest thing was, you know, I have this expectation for myself and I have this bar, and I had to lower that bar because it's so, you know, gut-wrenching to constantly fail to reach that bar. So over the course of the year, he realized that being in Chicago mattered, being the captain of the Blackhawks mattered, being here mattered, and he couldn't just go somewhere else and be as, like, Patrick Kane's in a different situation. Patrick Kane's still an all-world talent. Patrick Kane has several years of good hockey out of him.
The Rangers comment section will not agree with you.
Oh, God.
They are not happy with Patrick Kane yet.
And the first time he scores a hat-trick in the playoffs, though, he'll be the greatest player. They'll love him. But Taves is in an odd situation. I do think, you know, he wanted to come back. He wasn't sure if his body would allow him to come back, and he needed time to make that decision. And the Blackhawks just didn't give it to him because I think in their mind, no matter what, we're not bringing you back, let's at least give you the send-off, which is probably the right thing to do.
No, it was. I mean, I wasn't there last night because I was coming back to New York, but, I mean, everything that I saw, like, that... That was just too special. Like, give him that would have been really weird. I mean, Kane didn't get that opportunity. Like, we were all... I mean, it was interesting talking to Kane, though. He had said that he thought that he was going to be up there until the deadline, and the Rangers sort of pushed that we're down then, or we're losing games. This is not good. So, yeah. I think they allowed Taves that moment, and I think he appreciated that from everything he said. Like, he... Not to have that would have been hard. And I guess the other part is that, like, he's unsure, and... Like, even the Blackhawks re-signed him. I don't know what... Like, he was hopeful to play a whole season this year, and then this thing's, you know, they started having the same sort of symptoms, and so I think there's an unreliability to what his body is, too, and I think it all plays into...
Yeah, I'm splitting hairs. You know, I wrote you know, a little mini column off the game last night, and it was a really cool night, and I was really, really happy for Taves that he got that. It clearly meant the world to him, and it was classy of him to say, you know, this is for everybody from my era. This is for all the guys who didn't get their big send-off, like Keith and Seabrook and Sharp and Hossa and all those guys.
Did anyone get a send-off?
Not like that. Like, that was...
Well, did anyone,
different.
Like, know that they were playing their last game?
I don't... Maybe Sharp? Didn't Sharp kind of... Because he came back after he went to Dallas.
Because he sort of knew his contract. Well, yeah, I guess that.
But nothing to the magnitude
of what
this
was. Because Sharp did, like, there was something at
But Sharp had already left at one point. Yeah, like, he wasn't a lifetime Black. He played for the Flyers. I mean, he's beloved here.
Hanzus.
David Rundblad.
Yeah, I mean, Crawford, all those guys, everyone left so...
Crawford just vanished into thin air, yeah. I mean,
Seabrook's injury, Keith was with the trade. Saadi, you thought they were going to re-sign. I mean, that's obviously like...
Twice he got moved, yeah.
And Hossa with his skin... I mean, Hossa probably knew that he was playing in his final
but
game.
But nobody else did.
In the playoffs, yeah.
But, yeah, I was really glad that... It was a really fun night. It was a reminder of what... And a lot of guys were talking about this today, and that was Taves' post-game speech was... This feeling here, it used to be like this all the time. So if you put in the work, the juice is worth the squeeze. There's nothing like winning in Chicago. There's nothing like that crowd. And you got a taste of it. And it was really fun. And I'm glad he got it. It meant the world to him. But there's just some... I'm nitpicking here. But there's just some part of me that wishes he got to make that call and not Kyle Davidson. And that's... Hey, it's a business. I get it. But there are certain guys... that I feel transcend that, and he's one who should have gone on his own terms.
I wonder if there's a fear that Jonathan Taves can't make that decision. Like, I think the last few years have been really hard on for him, when to play and when not to play and when to step away. And yeah, I mean, everything I've heard that it's challenging sometimes for him, you know, like the...
It's tough for elite athletes to accept they're not elite anymore.
Yeah. And from what he said last night, there's a possibility that was his last game overall.
No question.
And you know, Pierre LeBrun had tweeted that it sounds like they're going to wait until the free agency and kind of see what's around and whether he's motivated. But it wouldn't shock me if that, you know, like, he just decides that's it. And maybe it does evolve into some other role with the Hawks and something else. he sounded as good as he did last night after the game and open about everything. And I know that he's been pretty good one-on-one and talking, but there's some, like, there's a motivation to him where he, I think a lot of things away from the game and a lot of things that he's dealing with, it just put him at times in a bad place, like mentally. Yeah. And
he sounded like he was in a really good headspace the last several weeks, not just last night. Like last night, he seemed so happy and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But for the last few weeks, every time he talked, and he's been talking every day since he came back, basically.
Yeah.
He just seems like he's in a really good space. He's glad he was able to come back. He's feeling a little better. I think he is. There's a sense of contentment now, and that's tends to be what leads a guy to retirement. Is when you go, you know what, I did all right here.
Yeah.
I
think having that night, like having that, and it's interesting. Was talking to having, I guess, to compare that to what talking to Kane. Kane was just relaxed in New York, and it was. There's so many guys in that room, so it's not like it's an entire like media scrum around him every time the room opens. And he's sitting next to Panarin, and they have some kind of backgammon rivalry now.
Yeah.
And he's playing meaningful hockey, and he'd said that he was he put on a line in practice, and he's like, even if it's not this line, it could be the third line, and that's, and he said it's better than any line that was in Chicago all season, which is sort of a backhand slap. But I don't know. I feel like both of them, as much as this could have been the end of Kane and Taves, like they're both, in a good place. And then I guess bigger picture, and I know no one wants to talk about it, but for the organization to sort of move on from Kane and Taves, and just I guess the legacy of how, everything that happened with Kyle Beach and how the Blackhawks seemed to want to get further away from celebrating cups and. That type of thing. I don't think it's entirely bad for the organization to turn the page in a lot of areas, and this does create a new chapter for a lot of players and a lot of
I would love to know how much that really played into this. Like Kyle Davidson's rationale for not wanting to keep Taves was he wants to give the next leadership group the chance to grow organically without those guys in the way. I don't totally buy that. I mean, there were leaders when Taves and Kane were rookies too. You had your Marty Havlats and guys like that.
Well, they came in a really good situation, right?
Yeah. There was already a big Keith and Seabrook were already there. Like, it wasn't like there was a complete leadership void there. There were veterans on that team, guys like even like a Brent Sopel type who had been around the league a bunch. There were guys like that that Taves learned to be a leader from. So I'm not sure I buy that. Taves being out of the room forces other guys to step up. I think that happens regardless. And I do think Taves could have been a very positive influence going forward. So I really do. I keep coming back, like you said, you mentioned Kyle Beach, and how much of this is the Hawks just wanting to be done and to move past it completely and have that be a part of the past and not still the present. Now, obviously, there are still members of the 2010 team on the payroll.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Patrick Sharp's in the booth, and Brian Campbell's right there in the front office right alongside Kyle Davidson. Jonathan Taves will be back, whether it's as a coach or some kind of Brian Campbell-like front office thing. There's Marian Hossa might be back at some point.
How much of it, too, is Kyle Davidson continue to divert from what Stan Bowman did?
I think that's the biggest thing, is he just wants to have, he wants to clear the decks for himself as much as anything. He wants this to be completely his team. Now, he's got Seth Jones until the year 2030.
Yeah.
That he's not going to be able to clear that deck, and Seth Jones was pretty darn good the second half.
Like, that has to be the most encouraging part of this season, other than Luke Richardson, is that Seth Jones, although he's not the elite number one defenseman that you probably hopeful that he can.
He is a number one defenseman.
Yeah,
on a
or that team. That the Blackhawks are hopeful that Korchinski or whomever, makes Seth Jones more of a number two or three defenseman. But the fact that Seth Jones looked like he was. Yeah, he played good hockey. I mean, we wrote about, there's an one of our all 32s that we were trying to decide who the best, who the team MVP was. And, that was a little bit more challenging than we expected. But, yeah, from an analytics standpoint, Seth Jones was the best player. And Luke Richardson even said last week he felt like when they were playing their best hockey, it was because Seth Jones was playing his best hockey. And it probably wasn't as consistent as they liked this year, but it does feel like he at least turned the corner. And.
And that's going to be the last link to the Bowman era. Like that's someone Kyle Davidson is, for lack of a better term, stuck with. But there are worse people to be stuck with than a very good defenseman on a contract that, whatever. I mean, the cap's going to go up. That contract's not going to be.
Right now they need that contract.
Right now they need it, exactly. Yeah, it was interesting. Caleb Jones just now was asked why Seth played so much better in the second half, and he said that he was putting too much pressure on himself at the beginning of the year, and because of that contract, this is the first year of that $9.5 million contract had kicked in, and the first half of the year, Seth felt like he had to do everything. Like, he had to be, like, a one-man offense and defense machine, and then the second half of the year, he kind of dialed it back a little bit, played smarter, played a little more safe sometimes, and then the goals started coming. He started shooting more, the goals started coming, the defense was better, and if he can be that guy he was in the second half of the season for the next several years, Blackhawks will be all right with that. And if that's the last thing, the last piece of Stan Bowman, then Kyle can live with that.
I don't know how much I buy into the pressure being off, because I feel like he put so much pressure on himself last year. Like, that was the pressure time. And
it's different, though, when that first year that contract kicks
in. Yeah.
I remember Taves and Kane had that same issue the first year, because it was the 15-16, it was after the Cup, and Kane talked a lot about, you know, when you're making this kind of money, you have to live up to it and put that pressure on.
I don't know if it's fair or not, but they attribute a lot to the coaching, where I think they pushed him to play in a different way, where they saw him being too aggressive I think there's been so much talk this season about risk reward, and that's what they've been trying to push with Reichel and all these guys, is just not every play has to be special, and maybe some of that is, you know, Seth Jones just thinking like he has to make every play special, but there was more of a balance to it. And I guess that's the other encouraging part, too, was Reichel's, you know, like how he looked at towards the end of the season.
He looked really good.
I
asked Seth Jones just now, you know, what are the things you've seen over this year that give you reason to think that, you know, the rebuild's on the right way? And he just talked about Lucas Reichel.
Yeah.
Which is great that everyone thinks so highly of Lucas Reichel, but it's also kind of indicative there's nothing else on there that's really that exciting.
I guess a few things I found interesting from the people we just talked to. One of those, like, Connor Murphy's like, I have no interest in being captain. Like, that's too much. And Seth Jones, like, yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Well, I wrote about that earlier this year, that I'm pretty sure Seth's going to be the captain. And he's basically the polar opposite of Jonathan Toews in so many ways.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that works. Murphy seemed to think that there shouldn't be a captain next year out of deference to Toews. I mean, that's bullshit. I'm sorry, Connor. I appreciate the
Jones
the
gave a pretty good answer,
him,
though, about what he felt like the role should be, and, you know, like, knowing that Kane and Toews aren't there, and that how much it's going to be a younger group next year. Yeah. It's going to be Reichel and Vlasic and Kaiser and potentially Krejcinski and
Bedard.
we'll get into that in a second, but it's a group that it's so much different than when you walked in. It was Keith and Seabrook and that whole group, and now Connor Murphy's the longest tenured, and honestly, he hasn't
by far,
and he doesn't have the success or the, you know, I mean, I think he's built his own sort of resume and people respect him, but
he's
different.
He's never played in a real playoff game.
It's different
ever.
Than walking into that room that once was. So, the lottery is the other big thing that's, you know, it was.
I can't tell you how excited I am to not look up Anaheim Ducks and Columbus Blue Jackets.
We got one more night of it.
The amount of Columbus Blue Jackets hockey I've actually sat and watched over the last 3 weeks, it's like, it's bad enough we got to watch the Blackhawks every night. Now I got to add the Blue Jackets and the Ducks. Thank God the playoffs are here. I can watch good hockey.
Oh, God. I've had the calculator out so many times calculating points percentage.
It's really incredible how bad these, like, maybe Gary Bettman's right about tanking, because everybody kept winning. Every time someone had the inside track to 32nd, they would go and win.
But it's also that there were so many bad teams this year. Like, it's usually not this. There's not many of these teams under 400 points percentage. Like, it was so many teams that were bad. This
Anaheim and Columbus did this the honest way. They just sucked. Like, they weren't supposed to be tanking this year.
Yeah. And I was talking to sources. You know, I'm like, do you guys regret signing Domi or Anastasiou or anyone that helped you? And they're like, honestly, we should have been bad enough they got number one, and they, no one expected Columbus. I mean they had a lot of injuries, but Columbus was
they signed Johnny Gaudreau this offseason.
I think the Blackhawks are. I think what Anaheim's going through this year is what the Blackhawks could go through next year. Yeah. I think it's playing with prospects and being more interesting, but probably having a similar record in points percentage and being sort of in that race again. And if the Blackhawks, we'll find out tonight if they finish 31st or 30th, and it does matter in that either you guarantee the top four, which is great, or top five, and if you get that fifth pick, it's not as great. If you don't get Bedard or Fantilli, you're probably waiting for someone. You're obviously waiting for Michkov. Carlson sounds like he could spend another year in Sweden. I think the Blackhawks are going to be just as bad next year. Like, it's just they know that they need multiple players to make this thing good again, and that probably means trying to have another top five draft pick and kind of dealing with the same.
And you know, I think it'll be easier to swallow for the fan base if they just suck honestly next year.
Yeah.
And if there is a bunch of young guys you can look at, you look at full season of Reichel, maybe Korchinski. There's something to cling to there if you're a fan. Like, this season was gross.
Like, yeah, there's so many guys that just weren't going to be here forever.
Right? Yeah, like, it's just how many Anders Bjorks and Austin Wagners can you have? It was just so cynical and just blah. And there was nothing to cling to because you knew most of these guys weren't going to be back. Like, next year could be just as bad.
I guess the funny thing
is, so much more enjoyable.
The Blackhawks were just as guilty. But it's funny where Columbus hit with six players in, making their NHL. Like, they were just trying to one-top. They one-topping each other, you know? One-upping each other throughout the year at the end here. It was no fun for anyone. Like, this team was just, there's players that weren't relevant beyond this season. I mean, Anthony Seau maybe comes back now, and they re-signed Domi. There's so many guys that just
weird. Did Anthony Seau not sound that enthusiastic about coming back next year?
I feel like that's how he is all the time.
He's kind of a chill guy, yeah.
He's just like, but,
I finally found my home.
I just think he's so used to, I'm just going to.
Every year's a, he said, it's like every year's been a one-year deal for me, basically.
The Blackhawks need to get to the floor and probably spend a little bit more than that.
But there's nobody to spend it on. This is a bad free agent.
They're going to be some really contracts be like, whoa, they paid them that much. And as long as it's a year or two,
that's what Davidson said yesterday. He said that it's going. They're not making any long-term deals. It's all going to be short-term stuff.
It's
stopgaps. It's stopgaps.
I wouldn't be surprised if they signed Domi and Anthony for $5-6 million each.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's the advantage they have, is they can overpay somebody if they really want to bring somebody in, a Domi or a Fantasy.
Yeah, but those are the type of players that you probably, that are fine, but they're probably not part of the future either. So there's all guys. I mean, look at the free agency. It's Compher, it's Bertuzzi, it's and there's a bunch of older guys too. Like, it's not a great class, and a lot of the they're gonna have to spend money somewhere, and it's, there's some variables, because if Korchinski comes in, or you have some younger players come in, they're coming at entry level deals, so you need to make up for the rest of that money somewhere else. So.
And you could say, maybe they can take on some more bad contracts at the draft to get more picks. That's great, but at some point, Nikita Zaitsev's in the way right now.
Yeah,
like if I'm, you almost have to buy him out. But
better they just gonna wave him and send him to Rockford and see if he'll
just bury him. Yeah, I guess. But it's like
one else had a problem sitting Zaitsev the last few years.
It's hard because you need to pay somebody.
Yeah.
But especially on the back end, they don't have a lot of spots, because you've already, now that you're bringing Jared Tenorti back, you've got Murphy, you've got Jones, you got maybe Caleb Jones. There are guys in the way here.
Well, I think it's Seth Jones, Murphy, Tenorti. I think Vlasic and Kaiser are two guys they like to promote. I'm curious with Caleb Jones, because I think bringing back Tenorti may have already taken up a spot that
You got to have at least two young guys.
I think you're opening a spot for you. Gutman's kind of proven that he's here.
Yep.
Reichel, beyond that forward.
Well, there's spots up front though. Like, there's a lot.
I think they're going to spend money on the forwards. Like, I think they need to. Like, that's where you're going.
You want Lucas Reichel to have a viable line mate to play with. Yeah. Whether that's Athanasiou or Domi or.
You'll see a couple, and maybe even one or two more Athanasiou or Domi like players and guys.
Yeah, I mean, JT Compher has been an inevitable future Blackhawk since day one. We all know he's coming home at some point.
It'll be interesting. But I also think if somehow they get lucky enough in the lottery, that if they get Bedard or Fantilli, then they'll want to find out who, I think they'll be a little bit more selective of who they bring back. Yeah. And I don't know if it changes the overall plan for next year, but I think they want those players playing with players that can play, that have experience playing with other high-end players.
The good thing about this lottery being so set at 1 and 2 is that once you have the lottery on May 8th, you can make all those decisions.
Yeah,
you know who you're going to get.
Yeah. It's too bad the lottery just isn't next week. Like,
it used to always, like, they're just dragging this shit out now. It's just, come May 8th, give me a break here.
If the Blackhawks don't get those top two, and if they, Carlson, Michkov, they're supposed to be
players.
They
can pick fifth also. That's as far back as they can fall.
Is this season, is it a failure for not, for everything they went through and all, preparing to the tank and not to do it? Like, is that...
I always hated when they were good and people said, well, if they don't win the cup, it's a failure. I always hated that. But in this case, with just what they got rid of and just what they put their fans through and just how gross and cynical and bad this all was, if you wind up with the number 5 pick and get, what's his name, Will Smith or something like that,
yeah.
No, this was not worth it.
Yep.
This was, you could have had Alex DeBrincat and still been the 5th worst team in the league. So, like, and I know Alex DeBrincat's whatever, you, however you feel about him, he is a good player who can score goals, who would be great on a line with Lucas Reichel, and he's 24, 25 years old.
Kane would have never left. He would have still played throughout the season, probably.
The whole point of this season was to get Bedard, settle for Fantilli. And if you don't, and there's a very good chance they don't get those guys now because it's really hard to be the worst team in the NHL, then yeah, this was kind of a waste of a year and just a devastating waste of a year. It's not just that they squandered a year. It's that they completely gutted the team for very minimal gain.
I think it's a sliding scale because if it's Bedard Fantilli, then it's a successful season. If it's Carlson and Michkov,
yeah.
I think there's still... It pushes the timeline back. Like, they're two guys that are both... you talk to Corey Prom and these guys, and they think Michkov pushes Fantilli. Like, it's just that
he's 3 years of waiting.
Yeah, and then if beyond that, yeah, I think this season, yeah, it's a failure in that, yeah, none of those guys are guaranteed as much. And Carlson and Michkov, and no one's guaranteed, but they, as much hype as that is built around those top four, to get a 5th pick, it would have felt like going to these measures to do it weren't worth it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's talk about Luke Richardson. His first year is complete. He led the Blackhawks to the worst season in franchise history. And everyone thinks he's the best.
Yeah.
It's kind of an amazing thing. Like, he has gained so much respect for what he's done with this team just because they haven't been embarrassing. Even when they lose, they tend to lose. As Mackenzie Entwistle said, they play to the end whistle, which made me laugh because I'm a dad. It sure seems like they got the right guy for the long term. He seems to check all the boxes. The players respect him. They listen to him. His system works. The veiled shots at Jeremy Colleton we've heard throughout the year when they talk about how all of a sudden we have a system that everyone understands, like, it's hilarious to listen to.
I talked to Colin Murphy about that recently. It was about the zone to man, and Murphy said, like, you have the right personnel, man can work, but it just, and that was the problem. Colleton never adjusted, you know.
It was the square peg into a round hole thing.
Yeah, like you tried to play with players who couldn't play that system, and like, it's funny because some of the statistics are still, they're awful this year. But they never looked, like, it wasn't as wide open as, you know, like, the chances.
Remember
remember
opening day last season in Colorado?
Yeah.
Where they were like, oh my God, this is the worst hockey team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There were very few games where they looked that overwhelmed.
Yeah, and that's, like, when you watch Anaheim or Columbus in some of these games, like, yeah, there were nights. I mean, Columbus lost, like, they gave up 6-7 goals every night for a month there. It was respectable hockey, and the question is, does it work when you bring in the right talent? And you would think so. And I guess that's the only thing, is that as you bring in stars and you bring in the more skilled players, like,
they adapt and buy in?
And can you sell them on working that harder? You know, like, it.
Well, the good thing is Davidson seems to understand what Richardson wants in a hockey player.
Yeah.
Every guy he brings in, like a Joey Anderson, immediately seems to fit. So if they draft accordingly, like the Frank Nazar types of the world, these kind of high energy, high motor, forechecking, you know, frantic players that seem to work in this system, as long as they keep drafting accordingly, it seems like they can build a team that could be really successful.
The thing that I see being the biggest hurdle for this team is finding people who can score, you know, like, and that was even as they were like, analytically, they had some good nights here toward the end. The problem is they don't have many guys who could score, and that's why it makes the Brinkets of the world so valuable. Yeah. is that you knew that he was worth 30, and I mean, Anthony got to 20, but for the most part, this team has really struggled to score all year, and it's hard to find those guys, and that's why you need the Bedards of the world, and you need to find a few of those guys in the draft so that you're not overpaying for them at later. You know, later ages and you know, or trading multiple pieces to get those type of players. That you need to draft a couple guys who can be 30, 40 goal scorers.
Right.
Because it does feel like they've drafted very similar players, and the guys like Savoie and Lewinsky, and these are all guys that are going to be great forecheckers and have speed. But you need some proven goal scorers, and you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, look who the Blackhawks had when they were good. They had Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa, yep. Jonathan Toews, guys that could put the puck in the net. And then they also had those kind of scrappy guys and the depth guys, yep. and the speed guys. And then they also had, you know, puck moving defensemen. And they also had your Jalmerson and your Oduya. Like, they had variety and depth,
yeah.
but they had that high-end finishing ability, which when it comes down to it, you need to score more goals than the other team.
And it's how you find those guys. And obviously, they got very lucky with Sharp and with Hossa. It just kind of lined up, but it doesn't seem to line up with the Hossa types too often now, where they...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Hossa was a strange case, you know, becoming a UFA at that point of his career, but yeah, it'll be interesting, because, I mean, it was obviously drafting Kane and Toews that sparked a lot of that, and then everything else lines up. So, yeah, I mean, the Blackhawks need to get these draft picks right. I mean, it seems like Korchinski's on the right path, and they need a top four pick this year. They probably need another top five pick next year, and then they need some things to go right. At some point, they're gonna have to spend money wisely and spend them on the right people. Right now, it's a little bit easy where, you know, you bring in guys who fit and, you know, they're good in the room and decent enough on the ice. But at some point, it's gonna, you know. Davidson right now, it doesn't have a lot of pressure on him, you know? Like,
right. The guy's got the longest leash I've ever seen.
Yeah, like that's the upside of walking into this job and trying to sell, you know, the Wirtz family on that we need to be different. And part of that is it's going to take a little bit longer than you probably hope. So, but at some point, that has to accelerate. And next season has to look different than this year. Yeah, I think the Blackhawks are really fortunate the fans were as good as they were this year.
Like, yeah, because they averaged 17,500 a game almost. It's incredible. Like kudos to Chicago.
Yeah, it's. I don't think the Blackhawks anticipated that. I think they were.
No, they were hoping for. They needed 14,000 a year a game to break even.
Yeah,
basically, is the
yeah.
Way
I mean, honestly, that. Yeah. I mean, we talk about MVPs. It had to be the fans for coming out to that all season. And so.
Well, let's go through this roster here and see who's going to be back next year. Obviously, UFAs. Toews is gone. Athanasiou, I expect to be back.
Yeah, I think they overpay him and he comes back.
Jujhar Khaira, I expect to be back. He had a really strong close to the season. He's well liked. He's a good solid third liner type.
I guess it depends on who. I mean, if Gutman and like at some point, like, yeah, I don't know the numbers exactly, but I mean, if you're promoting Gutman and Reichel full time, and it's we'd have to probably kind of break down how many forwards and defensemen are. But
the other UFA is Andreas Englund, defenseman. I think he's a goner. Goaltending-wise, Alex Daylock's a goner because they got to make room for probably Soderblom or even Stauber if he wins the job, which is especially with Kemeso going to Rockford now next year.
I think with Soderblom, he's had back, like, they've started him in back-to-back games recently because these games are so important. I think they're...
He's the guy.
Yeah, he's the guy. And Stauber was better than anyone expected.
Yeah, just having him in the system, that's good to know. You got a number three and don't have to rush Kemeso if there's injuries or anything like that. RFAs, this is where it starts getting a little interesting. Anders Bjork, who showed flashes of being a pretty solid player.
Yeah,
he's a guy you could just re-sign for depth, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to go running off to some other team who's going to give him a big money. I mean, even if he winds up in Rockford for much of the year.
So who's definitively coming back on the forwards? It'd be Reichel and Gutman.
Here's who's signed. Tyler Johnson Radish. Is signed. Jason Dickinson is signed. Colin Blackwell is signed.
Yeah.
Then you've got Cole Gutman, Mackenzie Entwistle, Reese Johnson, Boris Kachuk, and Taylor Radish. Philip Kurashev is an RFA. He's obviously going to be back. That's your forwards. So there's room for a couple of guys. You figure one or two.
But they need to spend. Yeah, they need to spend money. So
I think Khaira, I would expect him to be back. He's another guy you can just throw an extra million at because why the hell not? Everybody likes him. You look at that Khaira, Kachuk, who else has been on that line in the last couple of weeks? I'm blanking.
Anderson.
And Joey Anderson. Yeah, that's been a really good line for them.
Yeah.
So they might want to keep some semblance of that intact. On the back end, I mean, it's pretty set in stone. You got Seth, you've got Connor Murphy, you've got Caleb Jones.
I think they walked from Ian Mitchell, probably.
Ian Mitchell, I think, is probably done here. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of, he had his chance. He didn't get a ton of minutes instead.
They got a lot of defensemen coming. Dumbass was coming in, and Nolan Allen.
And Mitchell's what, 24 already? I mean, at some point, he's not even a prospect anymore. Jared Tenorti's going to be back.
Yeah.
Like you said, I think it's Vlasic will definitely be a full timer.
Yeah. I think Kizer too. Yeah. And then Korchinski.
Korchinski's the X factor. If he makes the team out of camp, then it gets a little complicated.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what that, like, he, I mean, as good as he looked last camp, and if he's close, I don't know what, the, and maybe he gets, you give him 9 games and sort of see where it's at, or play him as much as possible. Like, it probably doesn't matter if he burns that year or not, but, you want him to be start factoring into here sooner than later, and I don't,
I think they're going to give him every opportunity to make the team.
Yeah.
And I know Davidson's been preaching patience from day one, but they need people to market next year. That does count into this at some point.
It's also like, what do you weigh between like another season in the WHL? And
what's he going to get out of that?
Yeah, like I don't know if there's.
I'll tell you, I was in Seattle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I spent a couple. They had a 2-hour practice, and I was freezing my the coldest rink I've ever been. I thought that Johnny's Ice House West was the coldest place in the world, and then
Chelsea
I thought
Chelsea Piers used to be really
Chelsea
cold.
Piers. But then I thought that, remember the Notre Dame practice rink, that extra practice rink at Notre Dame?
Oh, yeah.
That was the coldest place. I remember Joel Quenneville walking out going, "This is the fucking coldest place I've ever been." Well, he's never been to the practice arena in Kent, Washington.
Were you there for 2 hours?
I was there for 2 hours, wow. And holy shit was I cold. And I'm never cold. I went and had lunch with our editor, Alex Iniguez, afterwards, and like 2.5 hours later, and I was still shivering. I was bone cold. But Korchinski, holy cow. Like, there's some guys, when you watch them skate, like, you go, holy shit, that guy can really skate.
Yeah.
And you know, you see it when you see a McDavid, a McKinnon. There's just guys out there that just are special, and this guy, the way he's able to move on the ice in traffic, away from traffic, the way he cuts, the speed, the burst. I am not a talent evaluator, but there are guys that just jump off the ice at you.
Yeah.
Kid's legit.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot to be excited about.
They drafted him because of that. And Rinzel, they think, is even a better skater. Obviously, Rinzel has to figure it out in other ways. But they definitely emphasized skating on the defenseman, and they thought that was so important. So.
Do they buy out Zaitsev or just bury him?
Yeah, maybe some of it depends on the lottery. Like it, but yeah, I don't know. It sounds like the. I mean, it's a numbers game soon here with defensemen. And I mean, they started.
He's sitting, very bad.
Yeah, and they basically had.
Right now, got completely torpedoed because of
Zaitsev. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked. Like they buy him out, and they still can. You know, so they still get some of that money they need to, and. Or bury him. Yeah, one of the other. I'd be surprised. Like he's not an NHL player anymore. Like it's not good to have him playing with even your prospects. So, but like we talked, like that's an interesting team. It's not a good team.
No, but it's I've mentioned this before. But that team during the COVID season when there were no fans, that team they played above their head, which helped. But it was a young team. It was almost all prospects with Taves, Taves was out that year, but with Kane and a couple of veterans in there. It was fun to watch. It's fun to watch.
For sure, yeah.
It's just more interesting as a fan.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like, if you lose 5-0 with this team that they had this year versus losing 5-0 with a team that has Lucas Reichel and Kevin Korchinski and all these prospects on it, it's easier to swallow I saw Reichel make this one play that was just awesome.
Yeah.
And then that's what you can cling to because nobody's coming into next season thinking the Blackhawks are going to be any good.
Right, yeah.
So if you know the deal, but you got some exciting young players to cling to, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you're probably promoting almost your. I mean, right now I think Korchinski is the number one prospect, and Reichel is probably number two. Soderblom is probably in the top five, and then Nazar is up there, and but then even guys in Rockford, guys aren't Colton Dock and Nolan Allen and guys that potentially could be NHL players in a few years that are all going to.
And we'll probably see Nazar at the end of next season.
Yeah, I would think
after college, he'll join the team in Bernie year. I mean,
and a lot of those guys they drafted were guys in the CHL who are going to turn pro after next. A lot of them already have contracts, so. Yep. The fact that even some of them are, even like someone Camaso, like they're interesting guys. You'll probably see at some point next year, instead of Khudobin being recalled or someone like that. The goal was to lose this year with with players who had no future with this team. Right. Most of them in the next year, it could be lose with players who have a long term future. So that's
or maybe we're just telling ourselves this because we can't go through another year like this. This was a long year.
I honestly think it's close to Anaheim. I think Anaheim fan base seeing some of those players, knowing that they're going to be there part of the future,
knowing they've got Zegras, knowing they've got Terry. Yeah, it definitely helps.
Yeah, for sure. This year was different because we were so excited to have Axis back, and that was great. Yeah.
The team, to its credit, like, this was not some kind of moribund, sad-faced team.
No.
Everybody understood the assignment, and they managed to have fun and enjoy the
year. But fans didn't care about long-form features about a lot of these players. So.
Yeah, we weren't going to write the big Austin Wagner story.
Yeah.
Once the trade deadline ended, you and me looked at each other like, who are we going to write about? Like, nobody wants to read these stories. Next year will be different. Next year it'll be more interesting.
Yeah,
is all you can really ask for.
Yeah,
I think that's.
How many years have we?
This is our 11th season.
How many years together now? It's
18-19 was our first. Okay. So 18-19, 19-20, 20-21, 20. Fifth year together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And only like two of those were normal years because of COVID.
We still talk to each other.
I know. We get along great. We just don't podcast enough.
Yeah. Well, I always say we're going to work on that, but that's not true.
We say that every year. It's going to be more structured next year, too. We'll do it all, yeah.
We were more structured, like, for a few weeks there. And then, you know, Niall Conley, who does the intro song, is coming out with a new album on June 1st.
Maybe we'll change the song.
Well, that one. But I promised him that we'd have him on as a guest at some point.
Sure. Does he know anything about hockey?
No, I once took him to hockey practice.
So that's what I'm told every day.
He's been to one hockey practice. He went to Johnny's with me once, so... So people should watch out for Niall Conley's new album.
Thanks for hanging with us all year. I gotta say, at the beginning of the year, me and Scott were very, very concerned about what our readership was going to look like, and it was a lot better than we expected, just like the fans showed up at the games.
Podcast listens are always the same, regardless.
I think it's the exact same amount of this. There's never a new person. We've never lost a person, and we never gained a person.
Yeah, we appreciate everyone who's stuck with us from the start of The Athletic through... having two beat writers and, without the fan base, and obviously the Blackhawks are being supported by a strong fan base, and we certainly feel that with our coverage, too. So.
And we're hardly done. There's a draft lottery on May 8th you might have heard of.
Yeah, Mark's actually going to cover playoff hockey, which I'm jealous in that you're covering playoff hockey, but also not jealous.
On the one hand, I'm super excited to cover, I'm going to be covering Rangers Devils and popping over to the Islanders while I'm there, get a couple of weeks in New York. On the other hand, man, 2 weeks off would have been nice.
Yeah.
It's been a long season.
No,
but it'll be fun. I got to do this last year with the conference final, and it was just kind of rejuvenating to cover meaningful hockey once again. And you know, I look forward to it being the Blackhawks again someday because that's where most of my readers are. But it's just nice to be in a building where, like, even last night, like, it was different. It felt different in the United Center yesterday, and it's a reminder of how, you know, you and I both came onto the beat during the 2013 season. And we were spoiled early on by how fun it was to cover these teams, even though you
not
hated
for me.
It at the time. I it'll happen again someday by the time Seth Jones' contract expires, probably. And but for now, keep reading. We got a lot more to say.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me